Hi, you're listening to Spooks, Creeps, and Assorted Devery. I hope you enjoyed the show.
Hey, creeps, I'm Laura, and with me tonight I have my awesome co-host Tanya.
Hi.
And I have Rick.
Yeah, not awesome.
Who's also awesome.
No, thank you. I appreciate that.
Rick, who do we have on tonight?
And we have some huge influential people in the podcast world. We have Scott Philbrook and Forrest Burgess from the Astonishing Legends podcast.
Yay!
Welcome aboard, guys.
Hey, glad to be here.
Hi.
It's an honor to be asked.
Oh, no, you guys are...
We appreciate it.
It's an honor for you to be on the same screen as me right now.
Oh, so, yeah. Very kind of you to say, sir. But also, yeah, it was great seeing you and everybody else in person. I actually just listened to your episode on Monster Fest.
Oh yeah, I listened to that.
And it's a. I was going to ask you folks. It's a lot different feeling doing this in front of a live audience, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It was
the most. Like I don't have a problem public speaking, but if you've got an hour and yeah, you've got that kind of a platform. Like yeah. you don't want to screw it up. And
on top of that, the room was 1,000 degrees.
Yeah.
Yes, right. It was. But yeah, I bet we didn't have as many people as y'all did sitting
no,
in there.
No. We had plenty of open seats, guys. You could have joined us.
We were stuck at our table. Stuck at our table.
Schmoozing.
Yeah, I think they were buying merch from our table at that
time.
That's
right.
Yeah,
you guys, you guys are doing a brisk business. And I love the stickers. You got a few of those. I've got up onto my one day when I have my own space to record in. That'll be part of the decorations, but I've been putting all the different stickers because here's the thing is that you meet people and they've got t-shirts or merch they're giving away and you've got to keep all that straight. And it's really a record of this journey as podcasters.
Yeah.
And as you said on your episode about this, it's one of the most wonderful things that you can experience is just this community of like-minded and kind people. And it's, they're all everybody's friends, and we'll see until the any UFO news drops just how
tomorrow
right.
And it's already getting really weird. I don't know if I was going to ask you folks if you just noticed the camps and the ramparts going up and the flag waving, and it's like no, you guys are wrong and you guys are wrong,
man. No,
it's getting weird out there.
It's exciting. I think I'm excited more than anything. And that's like I'm a cautious, like I'm a skeptic, but I'm cautiously optimistic.
I think that's the way to be.
I am very much romantic when it comes to this kind of stuff. And I keep seeing these things and I keep hearing these stories and I keep like, ooh, it's happening. Like that's the feel. Like, we're here. Like when I was 10-year-old Rick 30 years ago, we never would imagine we were at this point. So I'm thrilled with it, frankly.
Yeah, I just watched a clip which I sent to Forrest within the past hour. You know, that Christopher Mellon, who now runs a private equity, but he used to be head of whatever the intelligence, can't even remember what his title was, but a big deal in intelligence. And he was basically saying, I've been told by high ranking members of the Pentagon that we have captured technology that's not from Earth.
Yeah.
And then he went so far as to imply that it came from another government's space program, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
Nobody has said that. And I couldn't tell if that was a slip up or whatever. But then that made me think about the whole Mussolini thing. It's like it could go back that far with whatever that they just revealed about the UFO that crashed in Italy in the when Mussolini was still around. I can't remember what year, but they were saying that we took that from Italy.
Oh, I had not heard that.
Keep hearing fascist UFOs or something like that.
Hey, there's always been a connection. Weirdly,
he's like, "You want that UFO?"
Right.
Take it. but I think, sorry for me, people that can't see me, I just did a Mussolini impression. But
it was spot on.
It was great. Yeah.
we don't need to be a meme. Thank goodness it's not going out.
Yeah.
This is recorded. We're going to screenshot it. Scott.
Yeah, there
You're
you
gonna
go.
Be all
screenshot my Mussolini.
Hell,
but you know, the thing that's weird about that is like that there's not necessarily any relationship between our timeline of development and the timeline of something that came here from somewhere else. So that thing would, whatever it represents in terms of technology, it could have easily represented in Mussolini's time or our time or 1,000 years ago or 1,000 years from now. So it's weird.
And I don't think that's technically, that's the first time we've ever recovered anything somewhat officially or unofficially, maybe by governments, but they've always been reported. If you look back, and there's different terms and different descriptions for stuff. I was just, that just made me think of the famous UFO crash, which I would have loved to have been around at the time because it seemed so accessible. And that'd be the Aurora, Texas UFO crash landing. And that was April 17th, 1897. And the little town of people, everybody in town saw this kind of, and if I remember correctly, it was a cylindrical object. It seemed to lose altitude and it kind of crashed in, I believe, somebody's field. This is just going off my memory here, that, and there was a little man inside who was injured, and he was like a little homunculus pilot. And they didn't know how to save him. So I think they gave him last rites and he didn't make it. And they buried him in a cemetery. And it also ended up on an episode of UFO Hunters.
Is that the one that clipped the windmill?
Clipped
the windmill, right?
I think so. Yeah. And so he crash landed and, you know.
Was it the little guy that was inside Carl Steichen in Men in Black?
You're always going to make that joke. That is the go-to.
Oh, you ruined his punchline, Scott.
Sorry. I spoiled it.
The punchline is that whatever is there supposedly is still there. And UFO Hunters.
Yeah, well, they took the grave up, though, didn't they? They were trying
to. It's on there. But you know, UFO Hunters, and that show came out a decade ago or more. They petitioned the town council to go dig, and they wouldn't let them. And it's like, well, I understand that point that you don't want your town's graveyard to be a carnival circus atmosphere and all that, but they're also wanting to dig in a place where there is no headstone. So why would that be of any concern? It's just
man, you got to hang on to your legacy. It's the same thing with the all the people that say that there's a couple of towns that say Billy the Kid is buried. And they won't let you dig.
Because they did one
where they did DNA and it wasn't him. So then they're oh man, nobody's going to come here anymore.
Right.
But that's the point, is that Aurora is saying there's no man there to find anyway. So they're not like they're saying you're going to ruin our little man Aurora days. Homunculus days in Aurora. And that's going to spoil it. It's just, but I get it. It's like, they don't want to know any news about it. And I understand that as well. We found that with the Berwyn Mountain incident in Wales. People get mad. They get upset. They don't want to hear about it. And you can talk about it. And I see you at the pub. I'm going to punch you out. And that's a lot of attitude.
That's my approach to most things in life. I see you at the pub. I'm just going to punch you.
If I see you at the pub, I'm just going to punch you.
I'm just going to punch you for no reason.
It's like, what is it? The Banshees of Inisherin.
Colin Farrell and Inisherin.
Ed Sheeran. Yes. Yeah.
Banshees of Ed Sheeran. That's what I keep hearing from.
But
all right. So we like to ask all of our guests this question. How did you get into the paranormal?
I have a 25 minute answer. Go ahead.
I've always been interested in it, but it was more of a passing thing, really. Just had that fascination with, I'm old. So I grew up with In Search Of a little bit. And then as well as Unsolved Mysteries. I just love those programs and I love those mysteries. And I honestly think, too, just the rise of the internet, making it possible to really find and read a lot more about things, because there was a time when it was like, oh, my God, this is so fascinating. And the only thing you could do if you wanted to read more about it was get a set of $300 books from Time Life.
Right.
And then, but once it all got out there and you were able to dig into it, and which is what led Forrest and I to start the show. And the show has gotten me way more into it. You know, we're this is our ninth year, so been doing it for a minute. So it's like, I think the stuff that we've seen and uncovered and learned on our episodes has made me even more interested in it. And I'm a completely different person in terms of what I believe and don't believe, and my journey along disbelief and skepticism and all of those other things. I've I've made a big trip. So anyway, yeah. That's why.
Yeah, Forrest, we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I don't want to cut Forrest off. Questions. But I've been on a similar journey.
Get your shots ready, because that's the going thing every time he mentions San Leo's.
I didn't say it.
Oh, wait. I don't have any liquor in here.
I wait till I get home and then have them all at once. So.
Yeah, so take a whole fifth in one swig.
Exactly. You know, for me, I think a lot of folks, it depends on the family environment you grow up in, mm-hmm. and also your experience. And what we've noticed over the years, and I'm sure you have too, with people who've written into the show, and it was like, what do you guys think about this? We come across a lot of folks who weren't really interested in it, but it doesn't, the phenomenon, whatever it is, all of this stuff doesn't care if you're interested or believe in it. It just happens, I think. And you can either try to stuff it way down and ignore it and deny it ever happened. Or you could say like, well, that happened, and the family can either be receptive to it and your friends. And I think if they're not, you just kind of tuck that away and you don't talk about it because you get made fun of. Even your friends and family roll their eyes right in front of you.
Oh, yeah.
and they're, you know, they're not meaning to be maybe insulting, but I think also it's just easier not to. Or I've had friends, too. You start talking like, didn't you find that fascinating or that ghost thing? And they start cracking bad jokes. Because it's a way of deflection. It's whistling through the graveyard.
Right.
And to my point, my family never did that. They weren't particularly overly interested in the paranormal, but when something weird came up, we'd discuss it, and they were open to it. And I think part of that is, you know, part of that probably starts with my grandparents and my grandfather. You know, he's a very no-nonsense guy, very, very generous and loving guy, but, you know, he'd been through World War II and he'd seen a lot of horrors. And he was, I think a lot of people in that generation that went through that, either you talked about nothing and you just buried the PTSD deep down inside, or as they called it, being shell-shocked back then, or you talked a little bit about it. And I never met anybody, especially with his friends. I've been around a lot of World War II vets as a kid, and I never met anybody that openly bragged and talked a lot about it. And, you know, I've had people who are critical of us. And when we talk about a World War II vet coming forward with their story, especially for things like Amelia Earhart, it's like, oh, come on, that's just an old vet spinning tales and telling how they won the war themselves and single-handedly. It's like, yeah, I've never met anybody like that. They don't do that. If you had known somebody of that era, I'm sure you would agree. Mm-hmm. And so my point being is that my grandfather was a guy who would tell you some stories and wasn't afraid to talk about it. He just wouldn't bring out the most gruesome details, but he brought out a few. And so a few times it's like, yeah, I saw this this cigar-shaped thing that was kind of over the hills in northern Idaho, and it was pretty level. And he not only was in World War II, but he was chief of fuels at one of the local Air Force bases there. And he knew aircraft. And he said, this is nothing I've ever seen. I've seen all manner of military aircraft. This thing was cigar-shaped. No wings or method of propulsion, and it zigzagged its way out and out of sight. And he says, I guess that's a UFO. And that's of the era too, in the 70s, late 70s when I was growing up, where that was the hot topic. It was being talked about a lot. Same thing with Bigfoot, especially up there, not as much as Western Washington, but Eastern Washington, Northern Idaho, Western Montana, where my family's from. It was just de rigueur. It was just part of the conversation. Like, yeah, so-and-so saw it, or he heard this really weird growl. And, you know, this guy's a hunter all his life. He's never heard that, you know, that growl. Mm-hmm. And then when you get older and there's more access to media, you know, that's a Bigfoot growl. You know, that's a Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Growl.
Yeah.
But he was trying to describe it. It's like, yeah, that's no elk. Okay. People hunt elk up there, and that wasn't it. So to that point is that it was things like that were talked about, and that sparked my early interest in things. And like what Scott mentioned, it's like, well, you didn't have much to reference, but they did have a few old Time Life, that series of books. One was on ghosts. That's where one chilling story. And I go visit my grandparents for the summer.
You got one right there, Rick. Are you about to show?
I'm trying to find it.
Trying to find the ghost one.
But it was I'm looking for something. Yeah.
The movie.
Oh yeah, look at that.
My dad's dad, my paternal grandfather gave this to me in the early 90s, and I've had
awesome
since then. And it was a gateway for me. You open it up and you read about Nessie, and you read about Bigfoot and UFOs and spontaneous human combustion.
Yeah,
and you're hooked.
Yeah,
because it's like those are fast. It's like, why does that happen? What are those mysteries? And I didn't, you know, my parents and grandparents were like, don't talk about that. They were like, yeah, what do you think's going on with that? Like, well, we don't know. And then I remember one story that stuck with me is the moving coffins of Barbados. And it's like that creeped me out. It just like they're moving around and it's been sealed off with concrete. How does that happen? And
yeah,
it just everything, you know, like you had that, you had occasionally Reader's Digest, like I read about Oak Island in that.
Yeah.
And you're just like, what? That's a real thing? That's fascinating. And you want to know.
Yeah, I was fascinated with Oak Island. Yeah. Like incredibly fascinated with that. I even tried to write a screenplay around it when I was in college. And then my screenwriting instructor, who was a very, you know, he was really into experimentation. He was all about dream journals and, you know, all this stuff. And he truly transformed me. Like the thing I wrote at the end of his class was so good that he asked me if I had plagiarized it. I was so horrible at the beginning of the class, but then he was like, but I kept the dream journal. And then I wrote a short story based on this really weird dream. And he was like, are you sure you wrote this? And I'm like, come on, man. It's working. Your teaching is working.
That's what I was about to say. Like you improved.
But when
I was surprised at that.
Yeah. When I tried to work on Oak Island, he was like, you shouldn't write this. Don't even try. And I said, why? He's like, there's nothing you can put down in that hole that's going to work. It's just it's you're never going to be able to come up with something that will be a good payoff.
And unless Dan Brown could pull, you know, that's a different story. But that, you know, In Search Of, we have very little to go on. But a lot of when I was growing up, would be stories that were passed between kids and occasionally adults. And there'd be some family stories. My mom saw a ghost when she was a young girl and, you know, was never shy about it. There wasn't much to talk about. She just saw like two misty blobs in kind of human shape. One was, she describes as huge and a small one. In the cellar, she screamed, they flew over her head, and that's the end of the story. But like and so she goes, yeah, I believe in them, I saw them. And you know, so we were very open to talking about that stuff. And I think it wasn't until Scott and I met up, and you have to meet somebody, as you folks know, when you, even if it's virtual and it's through Zoom, once you find somebody that's interested in talking about that, you latch onto them, because like most of our other friends have a mild passing interest in this stuff, if any, and they certainly don't, like I said, a few friends, because they've experienced something odd, they will want to know if you know more about that or can explain something. And then the ones who haven't, it's like, huh, yeah, that's weird. Yeah. Okay, that's all I got to say. That's it. And so so Scott and I, that's how we started. I think we just, and I can't remember where we were, what sparked the discussion, or how we knew each other would be open to this stuff, but we started discussing things like dead water and the phenomenon and time portals or the Bermuda Triangle, like the old classics.
Right.
Yeah.
Because we hadn't dug deep enough or had the access to all the really odd things that were there, but that's enough to get you started. And then that was the idea. It's like, hey, we should talk about this more formally, not just at backyard barbecues. And then it's like, well, that, hey, there's a free way to get that out. You know how many, you know, if anybody's going to listen, but it's a worldwide platform that no one's listening to much yet.
Right.
So we just put that out there. But that's what we were talking about before we started recording here, is that then it's like, okay, let's see what else is out there right now. Yeah. And it was Jim Harold with two shows. And I was a little, it's like, dang, that campfire idea. I had that before I checked this out. And then you're a little deflated, like, yeah, he's already doing that. It's pretty good. Well, then Rob Simcox had the Paranormal Cafe, which was a AM radio, late night radio show out of Westchester, New York. And that idea, though, was like, it wasn't done for the podcast. It was an AM radio show where he talked about all kinds of paranormal things. It's where I learned about Rendlesham Forest. Because it was like groundbreaking, but it was just an AM radio show with him and a sidekick. And what he would do is, it was a 4-hour broadcast, and he would chop that into 4 1-hour podcasts and release them that way. So it's like part one, part two, three, and four. And so, yeah, I'd go to the gym or whatever I was doing, and I would just listen to those. Like, yeah, this is entertaining. This could be a thing. And also, no one else is doing it before all the the true crime and the paranormal and paranormal plus true crime and all that kind of genre developed, which is what we've seen now in the last 7-8 years. It was a novel thing, like the Time Life books or stumbling upon In Search Of. And it's like, oh, thank goodness there's Leonard Nimoy to tell us about this stuff, because no one else is.
Well, podcasts are so mainstream now, and that's a conversation you can have with anybody. You can say, hey, do you listen to podcasts? Then they'll tell you what they're interested in, and then you can make that kind of connection. You know, you talk about meeting people and making connections in this community, and, you know, I'll give you a good example. I'm a pet product distributor rep, so I travel for work, and I've got a Bigfoot sticker. I had a Bigfoot sticker on the back of my truck, and I had reps who'd be riding, you know, behind me in their vehicle, see the Bigfoot sticker, and then strike up conversation about it. Yeah. So you make friendships you wouldn't have otherwise had, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the cool thing. And you mentioned earlier, like, this whole community is, we're all a big, big family. Like, there's no toxicity really in this. And that's why.
That's right.
Yeah. No, there's camps of belief or what people believe, but even the, you know, some of our most skeptical friends, like you said, they still have an interest in it. They want some stuff to be true. I think that they have a very particular line of thinking in that, how, if it was going to be true, this is how it has to happen, according to their logic, their scientific beliefs.
Right.
So there's a lot of that, but they're still very skeptical about everything. And we joke with it. Well, one is our friend, good friend, Chris Cogswell.
Yeah, Cogs.
A doctor of chemistry. And very knowledgeable about nanotechnology and things like that. And, you know, we always joke, like, why are you listening to this at all? Because he has a deep, passionate knowledge and thirst for knowledge about this stuff. But he's also a scientist. It's like, you got to lay it out. He's got to see the digits, the data. Yeah. He's got to have his hands on it before he's going to buy into it. And it's like, I think that's very healthy. And then we have some, like I said, the friends that just roll their eyes at us. It's like, okay, I'm not going to bring that up again. And we'll talk about something else. And that's how you approach it. And I think there's, you know, I grew up and nobody got mad at each other for stuff. And now I see, like I said, if you didn't talk about it, what's great about those genres becoming more popular now is that people have some extraordinary experiences that they had to keep themselves for all their lives. And then that's another thing, as you see with I'm sure with the emails you get, it's like, I just want you to tell me I'm not crazy and I'm not alone.
Right.
And it's like, you're not alone and you're not crazy. These things do happen. And we've heard a handful of other stories that are similar to, not exactly the same, but very similar. There's some things that recur. And that alone gives them a lot of comfort. It's like, oh, thank God, I thought I was going nuts. And like, no one else had ever, because no one else talks about it. Maybe you are the only person on the planet that's seen a black, smoky, darker than dark mist come out of your Schiffer robe. You know, so, and it's like, no, that's actually a pretty common thing. I don't know what that is. Maybe it's about portals. It's about doorways, openings, thresholds. And what we've noticed throughout having done this for so long is that there are recurring themes. There are light motifs that happen.
Oh, yeah.
We don't know why, but yeah.
Well, you talk about changing beliefs, Scott, especially with everything, take a shot, Sally House. But you hear these stories and just, I've experienced nothing I can't explain in my life. So I'm very much a skeptic, but I hear these
that way.
Yeah, exactly. I'm changing because I'm listening to people's experiences, like they're, and I can't dismiss these people. Like I used to be, I need evidence. I need something more than an anecdote, but now it's become more important to listen to the person, their experience and how they felt. And it's not so much about the evidence anymore.
Right.
And that's kind of where I'm going. Yeah. So I've been on a very similar path.
It seems like that's it seems like that's where we all wind up going. Because that happens to a lot of people. You just get, and you get to the point where the evidence becomes less important. Now, when somebody's telling you a story, you want to know, you know, you want to know if you can believe their version of the story. And the more stories you hear, the easier it gets to figure out if somebody's exaggerating or it's creepypasta or something like that. But for the most part, and it's fun. It can be fun to evaluate evidence if somebody has it, but you know, it's also really time consuming and emotionally and everything else. And it's like I always say, you know, especially as a former editor, If you go into a haunted house to do a 2-hour investigation with 10 things that record stuff, then you have 20 hours of crap to go through and try to find, you know, a weird voice whispering or whatever. It's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. It is a lot of work. So, you know, but you start to hear the thing when you hear a few like convincing EVPs, or you see something that you can't explain on video, and you're like, okay, I'm done with the proof part now. I just want to hear different versions of these stories, like, you know, how they're happening. So.
Well, why don't you tell us about your experience, Scott?
Well, it's funny, when we started the show, I think I used to joke about this on the really older episodes, or not joke, but I would say, you know, I want something to happen. I wanted to experience something.
That's what Rick and Laura say all the time.
Yeah. And that's what I thought I wanted. And then, we were one of our earliest episodes. I think it was episode three and four was about Amelia Earhart and her disappearance. And we're still very much involved in all of that stuff, but all the things that are happening, we can't talk about. So we have to just sit on our hands about it for a minute. Oh, but man. I think there's more stuff will be coming out about that maybe next year. But anyway, so we were very interested in her story. And we were working on it, and a friend who's now a friend of ours, Chris Williamson, had started a show called Chasing Earhart, and he put together this big panel in Atchison, Kansas, which is Amelia's hometown. And I think she wasn't like actually was it which way was it for us? She was either she wasn't born there, but she grew up there, or the other way around. I know she was in house as a kid, but because I don't think she was born there.
I thought she was, but
maybe she was. And then she moved away when she was 8 or something. I can't remember. Anyway,
she was there till she was 14. And the idea though is that she, I think it was an uncle that built a slide off the roof.
Yes, for her of the house.
Adventures, that tree that she used to sit there and daydream under about flying, and
still there.
The swing, and it's right by the river there, and it's a beautiful house. And you know, and so. The other thing that people may not know is the mother's side of the family are the Otis family of the elevator fame. So they had a little bit of money to, you know, to build the house and establish themselves there. And of course her house is haunted. Just every house there, I think in Atchison is, as well as St. Joseph, Missouri, across the border. But
yeah, it's a spooky place.
Very, just a lot of, there's a really great vibe there, but it can be spooky. But yeah, that, so there's a lot of history and lore, but she's the biggest thing there next to the Sally House.
So we had heard that the Sally House was there, which is a haunted house that people had done investigations on. It had a family that lived in it in the 90s, famously was on Sightings. Is that the name of the show?
Yeah.
So the Pickman family, and some really bizarre stuff was happening to them, including the man in the family actually got actively like scratched in his back while a continuous camera was running for 30 minutes. You know, obviously they can't play a 30 minute clip on Sightings, but all the people that were there saw it happen.
Yeah. You can see it on camera. You can see it start to form.
You could see it. Yeah. Starting, but like they were like, we have this as a continuous take. He was right in front of us when this happened. So there was a lot of weird stuff there. And we were maybe thinking, oh, we should multitask while we're in town for this Amelia thing. We're on this big panel. And believe me when I tell you, we were the stupidest people on the panel. It's like folks that like the guy that found the Titanic and like all this, you know, all these people. But so we were coming in to talk about statistics and research we had done and all of this and this kind of thing. It was a lot of fun. But the Sally House, we were like, oh, yeah, let's go check it out. Because this was in 2015, I think. And
The panel?
Yeah.
Was it 15? No, it would have been like 2017, I think.
Oh, was it 17? Okay.
Yeah.
But either way, the point being that the Pickmans and everything that happened to them in that house was in the 90s. So, and we weren't really going to check it out, but we had a new digital recorder. I'll try to show this as short, as briefly as I can. A digital EVP recorder that we've talked about on our show because it's very good at getting EVPs. And it's a weird, that's a whole weird side story about this particular recorder. It's a Panasonic that came out again in the 90s, I think, that was originally just like you know, you would tell it what groceries you were going to get and play it back for yourself at the grocery store, I guess, or something stupid, you know, call mom. So it was one of those, just like a piece of junk. And we had been on a ghost walk with the Haunted Housewives in Ohio. They had come to a thing that we went to called the Kent Paranormal Weekend in Kent, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And they took us on a walk through the theater there, and they had one of these recorders, and they got a really cool EVP right there in front of us with it. And so I when we came back from that, I was like, I'm gonna get one of these. So I went on eBay and I got one, and they were incredibly expensive because all these ghost people know about them. It, you know, it was built to sell for like 1995 when it came out. So anyway, yeah. So we got one of those, and we happened to have it with us when we were in Atchison. And once we got past the sheer panic of the things we were going to say on the panel, we were like, you know what? I think I do have the headspace to stop by the Sally House. Why don't we just go over there? And we were friends with, at the time, the coordinator for tourism for Atchison, and she had the keys. So she's like, she called us up. She's like, come on over, dude. So we went over there. And when we first got there, we didn't even have the recorder. It was in the hotel, which, you know, Atchison's not very big, so it was only like 2 minutes away in a car. But we went in, and I was sort of the mind that whatever had happened there, I believed that what had happened was scary and weird. But I thought, you know, it was decades ago. The house is probably just a tourist attraction or a way for the current owner to raise money by letting people spend the night and all that kind of stuff. Right. It's a musty house, not very, nothing super impressive about it. But like, so we're in there, we're walking around, and I remember thinking we should go get the recorder. So we went back to, thank you, sweetie.
Oh, soda.
Yeah, soda. So we went back to get the recorder. I went back to the hotel to pick it up, and I came back and I was like, well, let's try to get an EVP here in the Sally House. And there were some strange incidents that happened with some of the people on our team, which you can hear in our shows about it. But the long and short of it is I left the recorder unattended in a room upstairs.
The nursery.
Supposedly one of the more haunted rooms. Yeah, the nursery. And I said, anything's here, wants to give us a message, give us a message. And I left it up there for 5 minutes or seven or something, came downstairs. All of us were downstairs talking very quietly at that point. We were probably about to leave, I think. And then I went back to get the, I timed it on my watch, went back upstairs to get the recording, came down, and I was playing it back, and everybody else was just talking. My dad and stepmom were there because they had come to see the, they love to travel, so they had come to see us on, do the Earhart panel. And then we had some folks that, you know, Tess, who has been with us for a long time, mm-hmm. is our producer and head of research. She was with us. So they were all just kind of, everyone's talking amongst themselves, and I held that recorder up to my ear, which is the stupidest thing I've ever done in my life, probably. And I didn't think anything was going to be on it. I thought I was going to be listening for a little whisper, and it got this horrific audio that is unintelligible, but clearly vocalization. It sounds like language. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it sounds like anger. And it gave me also a feeling like in my spine that, I mean, you know, in my life, I've listened to it maybe 20 times total. Mm-hmm. And the last time was, I'd say 2 years ago, maybe. But
yeah.
And you guys, if you want, you can pull that down off of our YouTube and play it for your listeners if you want to.
I listened to it again today, and it still gave me chills.
Yeah, I won't do it anymore. Was a crazy thing. So, and it also felt very, it wasn't that it said anything specific. It didn't say, Scott, you know, you suck or whatever, but it was like, there was a point there. It felt, I could feel like this message was for me. And I can't explain that. But anyway, I left out of the house with the recorder. Forrest even got that fleeting moment on camera, which we should find that clip because the camera's not, he's not even holding it up. It's just running and he's talking, it's rolling and he's talking to somebody and you can just see me like hightail it out of the house in the background.
He just walks out and of course, it is in classic, I guess current vernacular, like, nope, 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 nope. And, like, and my first thought was like, what just happened? And I didn't think anything untoward had happened. It just, I don't know what, like maybe he stepped on a cat turd. I don't know what it's, he just walked out the front door. And I was there chatting with Maria, who was part of the Atchison
Chamber of Commerce
with with their tourism and was very involved with the tours. And as Scott said, when Chris Williamson mentioned, he's like, hey, you know, the Sally House there in town, you know about it. It's a big haunted house. It's like, I've heard of the name. I don't really know much about it. I I may have seen sightings when it aired when I was a kid, but I didn't remember much of any of it. My impression was that it was much more like it was going to be like the Mac Interior Villa, if you know that, also in Atchison, and that's a beautifully restored Victorian type home, or even the Glick Mansion, which is right across the street on the corner, that it was going to be, you know, and that there's a gift shop, it's got jokes, and that it was much more like, and again, not that anything is staged, just not so much a regular grandma house as it turned out to be. And so not that it was, it certainly adds to the mystique, I think, because it is so mundane, and the type of house it is, that it's very regular, and that it's not like the Haunted Mansion at Disneyland. It's not all fabricated and gussied up so that maybe you were expecting, you know, some spooks. And of course the skeptical side would say, well, if it's too much like that, then your imagination takes over. You're of course you're expecting something to some creaks and groans and this and that and weird stuff to happen to your electronics. And so so I had the camera rolling. I can't remember why, because here's the other thing I didn't, you know, there's a lot of little stuff you put together afterwards that you think about in hindsight that may not have been unusual or non-mundane at the time. And Scott and I just talked about this for our Shades of Death Road episode, in that, you know, people's equipment malfunctioning. And that's talked about, as you guys know, a lot. And like, well, that's not really ever happened to us. And then it was maybe a couple of years of, well, it was probably closer to when we did the show, but I didn't really put much stock in it. So, you know, when I was at the house, I mean, it was a brand new camera, and Scott makes fun of me because it's a, a brand you've not heard of, made in China, but it is full spectrum and it's 4K, and it is pretty sophisticated, and it is a camera that has been manipulated technically by a ghost hunter so that you can have a switch. It'll switch between standard night vision and full spectrum, and that's when you see the video footage, you'll see it's pink in the daytime because it's just capturing everything. And then if you were to shut the lights off suddenly and you had an IR light going, it would suddenly be illuminated. And so that's part of the ghost hunting, is that we don't know what spectrum, light spectrum, these things appear on or may be able to be captured. So you just capture all the whole spectrum. And I just had the camera going, but the camera did shut off 5 different times.
Oh, wow.
At the house. And again, it's not like I think I may have gotten my attention more if suddenly my fresh battery suddenly drained in 10 seconds. It's like, well, I've worked, Scott and I have backgrounds in video for most of our working professional lives, and I've worked with video cameras all my life, and especially with my dad, who introduced me to that, and we would shoot stuff. And so I was very familiar with the techniques and the technology. That doesn't happen, neither does equipment shutting off. But it didn't really impress me because, like, this is the first time I've used it. Maybe it's just a piece of junk or whatever. It's got a flaw in it. And so I just would notice, like, oh, it stopped running. All right, let me just, it would turn back on again and it would go for a while. And then, I thought, like, all right, well, maybe the camera's defective, or I'll take it back on, we get back home and see if there's anything wrong with it. And it never did it again. And I've been on many other ghost hunts since then with it. And it never really shut off. It was just there. And you do have to wonder, is that just a coincidence? Like, the 5 times in its whole life that it was going to shut off just happened to be there.
That's happened to be there.
or was it something just like, think, or you do wonder later, is it just the being there? Yeah. That it's not the things that happen that are weird in a haunted location may not be intentional. Like, the scratches may be just, oh, I was just trying to, the ghost is like, I'm just trying to pat you on the back. Sorry about the scratches. I should try my hands, whatever it is. If it just happens by nature of them being there, and like batteries being drained, I don't think it's like, is it mysterious, mischievous imps that are, maybe suck the battery juice to foil you humans, or is it just them by being there sucking up the energy? That's an energy source in the stored form,
right?
And I'm feeding off this. You just gave me the spigot to drink out of, so that just happens. I don't know. But it just, and I don't think anything was trying to prevent us because they certainly got footage. It's not like it broke the camera.
Right.
It was just, in retrospect, it's like, yeah, that is odd. That was pretty odd that for it just shut off itself five times and never done that since. And maybe it worked itself out. The answer is I don't know.
Yeah.
And, well, anyway, Scott marching out of there, though, it's like my first impression was like, one, I hope we got something good. I don't care how scared and freaked out he is. I hope it's good. And the second, it's like, well, let's take a step back. Let's see what we got. And because, again, we hadn't had much practice with the DR60, maybe it was malfunctioning. But it was certainly very interesting because the first thing I heard was like, again, my point bringing up having worked with video equipment is like an audio equipment. For most of my life, is like, that is not interference. That's not natural. And it does sound like talking. It sounds like speech. So, yeah, we knew we had something. We just didn't know what. And I think that, you know, I always view ghost hunting a lot like fishing. Same thing with Skinwalker Ranch. You're basically fishing. You're throwing a line out there. You're got a lure. You're hoping you jiggle it just the right way and you get some reaction.
Right.
And with ghost hunting, it's I think Scott's experience is that, I don't know if you saw that one clip that's pretty popular now on Instagram, like it's a guy river fishing and he's jiggling a little it's a little minnow lure, and this giant monster like swirls out and I think that's like his experience. It's like, I wasn't expecting a river monster to to leap out at all of us.
Right.
You know, talking about that recording, it is going to sound silly, but I remember where I was when I heard it. It was that impactful. I was running a warehouse at the time. I was by myself in, it was the middle of the day, granted, but I was listening and I can feel the chills right now thinking about it. Mm-hmm. When that audio played, I felt it to my core. I spun around multiple times to make sure nobody was around me, because that's how unsettling it was. And I think for me, that and your Patterson-Gimlin five-part series were two things that really got me going down the less than skeptical route.
Right.
Like it starts opening that up. And your PGF series, man, I've listened to it twice. I forced my wife to listen to it on a road trip.
We're so sorry.
Yeah, no, she was fascinated. I forced her to listen to it.
Driving to France?
we road tripped out west, and it was the second time we had done it, and I downloaded the PGF series, I had the Mothman Prophecy series, I had the Skinwalker Ranch series, like it was all queued up, and we were driving out west listening to that, and then I made sure we were listening to the Skinwalker Ranch series going into Utah just for flavor.
Nice.
But yeah, like your show is so unbelievably well researched, and that's like the opposite of what I do. I point to you guys, like if anybody asks like what paranormal podcast should you check out, it's always going to be Astonishing Legends. I'm not just blowing smoke
here.
It genuinely is like you were the first major podcast I listened to, and you're the only one I'm still listening to 7 years later.
Wow.
Because
that is fantastic. It blows us away because I stopped listening after the first year.
Same here. I don't listen.
Rick doesn't listen. That's how. Yeah, Rick doesn't listen.
But it's a different. I mean, here's the thing.
QC it, so I always.
Yeah, he's forced to listen. I only listen if people accuse us of saying something that I'm pretty sure we didn't. So I have to go back and hear that section. But that's the thing about every, Rick, as you were saying, every experience, is different, and it's enjoyable in a different way. And like what I enjoy about your show is the roundtable nature of it. Everybody has a different opinion. They're coming in, you're chiming, you're having fun, you're cracking jokes. That's also another aspect of ghost hunting, in that there's the two types of people. Like I said, we're here to get evidence. So everybody very quiet. This would be very scientific. We've got angles and cameras and everything. And, we've got laser tripwires. We got all the gear set up. It's all synchronized to the second. And you can do it that way, and you'll just get like, this is weird. Two cameras out of the five capture this, but the other three pointing in the same direction didn't. What's up with that? And it's like, well, that's to be studied. That's interesting. Or you can sit around and have a lot of fun. And it's a very social kind of thing. Some of the most fun times when you're giddy because you've been up all night, and it's 4 a.m. You're going to have to pack up and get out of there, because that's when your shift at the lockdown is ending. And you're sitting around having fun and just sharing stories and other weird, creepy things. And it's usually hot. Like if you go in the summer at these ghost hunts, what I know is like they're not often air conditioned, and you're just sitting there having fun. And the other thing I noticed, and again, I'm not very much very well seasoned, but our good friends Jill and Roger Pingleton have taken me along on several Midwestern trips now, and that a lot of times you could sit there, and as Scott was saying, so like you got all these cameras and gear running, and you'll get some weird stuff happening, like, oh, two REM pods went off, you know, they're and or things will go off as if something is walking down a line, tripping them all off. They're going up
right
in sequence.
Yeah.
Not, and then you get a strange EVP at the end of it. And it's like, well, that was interesting. And then it's very quiet. And it's, again, it's not like fishing. But when we're sitting around and laughing and having a good time, that's the time I noticed that a lot of the times activity has kicked up, because there's more social energy and human activity, mm-hmm. and fun,
right.
times, and we're laughing and spirits are up even though we're tired. And I attribute that to being like at a party. Like you could, if you were a stranger at a party, you walk in and you don't say anything. You're just standing in a corner with your Diet Pepsi, and you're not engaging anybody. Well, no one's really going to maybe come up and talk to you.
Right.
You know, and and if everyone's doing that, it's kind of a boring party. And as soon as you start talking with people, that's when it livens up. Mm-hmm. And why should the spirit world be any different? If you sit there and you're just like, you're a spirit, you see these weirdos come in with all this blinking weird stuff going on because you're from the 1870s. And it's like, there's all these people coming in with all this weird stuff. Like, what do they want us to do? I don't understand. And they're just very quiet. They don't say anything. It's like, well, I have nothing to say to them. It's like they're just mm-hmm. screaming at me with this little recorder. And then what's worked as well is when we played Aracues, we'll play, Jill's played music from the Civil War. And we'll notice that the equipment starts kicking up with activity.
Yeah.
Because you're there, you're engaging with them rather than just shouting at them. It's like, you know, I right. dare you to throw yeah. things at me. It's like, I'm not doing that. I'm not,
right.
Yeah, I'm not going to play your game.
No.
But you're having a good time. It's like, then stuff happens. And it's, again, it's like at the party. Like if you don't say anything, no one's going to talk to you. If you start right. having a good time and being a little bit of the life of the party, then activity starts drawing towards you. And the thing with the Sally House, what I noticed is that little small things that happen, that seemed kind of prankish to me, because it was like, oh, you guys want something? How about this?
Right.
And it was just this scream. And then the way that people reacted, it's also fascinating. And that, you know, I've always say this now, that I've learned more about human behavior than I have about the paranormal. It's just the way mm-hmm. that people react. And Rick, to your point, it's like people have... We've gotten letters like, I broke down crying. I was shaking so bad. You know, my dog ran out of the room and won't come back into the room I play this thing in. To the other end of the spectrum, which is, you guys are a couple of idiots. This is the most, you know nothing baloney noise that you probably fabricated and stuck on there, you know, to get clicks. You should be ashamed of yourselves. Also, I had to sit through one whole episode and get to almost to the end of the next one to hear this uh-huh. thing. And it was such a letdown. So people, they have no reaction at all. And then some people are kind of in the middle. It's like, I don't know what was about that. It didn't scare me, but I felt really off. And mm-hmm. I had to go outside for a walk. Yeah. But I'm not afraid of it. It's just like, there's something weird about that thing, you know? And so you have just this whole spectrum of reactions. And it just depends on the person.
I threw my headphones. Yeah. I was at work and I flung my wow. headphones off. I didn't want to hear the whole thing. But then I put it back on.
She does
on.
That with most podcasts, though. She just flung her headphones off.
Yeah.
There was one couple that was debating playing it. They had paused it in their car, and then they pressed play on it, and they got rear-ended. Like,
oh, my gosh.
Right that second. And then there's a lot of stories about that. But, you know, coming back to your thing, Laura, and also, Rick, your disposition, my whole – there's me before that moment and me after mm-hmm. that moment. Mm-hmm. The before guy is dead and gone. So yeah. I'm a different – completely different person from that point forward. So I sought out the personal experience, and I got the personal experience.
Yeah.
And I'm seeking them less now. I still like to talk about this stuff, but I'm not.
You don't need anything else.
Yeah. Well, then, and there were folks, friends of ours, that speculated that part of the reason that it happened you know, with what I was doing there from an investigative standpoint was because I was kind of flippant about it and didn't respect the property. And I was, you know, thinking about Earhart and all that stuff. And I was just kind of like, well, we'll get a show out of this, you know, mm-hmm. kind of thing. And, you know, we're multitasking. So.
Well, that's the respect angle of things is something I've tried to be very cautious with. I don't want to say cautious because that seems like I'm scared of it, but I'm trying to be respectful. A good example, like Robert the Doll, you know, mm-hmm. I have one of the little Robert the Dolls and I treat him as if he were the Robert the Doll in the museum in Key West, just because I don't want to risk it. It's not worth it. It's same with
just
Ouija boards.
In case.
Yeah, like I have a Ouija doormat in my back door, and we always joke about the Roomba going over it and doing something. But yeah, you know, like we don't want to mess with it. We don't mess with Ouija boards. We don't mess with Robert the Doll. Right. It's not worth the risk. So you have to be respectful for it. So I get that completely. Well,
so Scott, were you completely open-minded at the Sally House, or were you just like, nah?
I was more like, you know, I don't think anything's happening here. Okay. Or if it was, or it probably did, but you know, wouldn't be happening all these years later. We're going to go in here and it's going to smell like a musty house and we'll walk around and, you know, and probably not much will happen. So I was, I think, dismissive of it. Not that I didn't believe in hauntings and ghosts, but I had never personally experienced anything of that nature. So yeah, I wasn't really thinking about it, but my son was with us and he refused to go in.
Well, he would not
go in the house. Yeah. He's 14 now. So I think he was, what year did you say it was, Travis or Forrest? It was two. Sorry. That's another friend of ours I was talking to today.
Yeah.
That was
2017, I believe.
Right.
Cause
so he was eight.
Yeah.
Well, actually, he was like, I'm not getting out of the car. He wouldn't get out of the car.
Gosh, I don't know. Maybe in 2018, because we all went to, some of us went to New Orleans because that was going to be the year for Podern Love for the podcast listener festival an event, but that got canceled. So some of us still went to New Orleans that year. But I was going to say, that is the person. I know how Scott's going to react. Who I want to see there and how they're going to react is Scott's son, because part of it is just seeing the attitudes. And now he's 14. Then how old was he then, Scott?
It was July 18th. It's almost exactly
2018. Okay,
just a few days ago, July 18th. Yeah. 2018. Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at one of the files now.
So, it's funny now. There could be the synchronicities that when we pulled up, because I remember, you know, I was excited for Scott's son. I didn't know how he was going to react, but he was much younger then. And of course, just a few years when you're a queen makes a big difference. And I think he was very excited to go because also grandpa was there and grandma and Scott and Tess and Megan, like there was a big group. So I think he thought that was fun. And, you know, he seemed very excited until the moment that we pulled up. And then he was like, no, he did the same thing. Nope, not going in. And they started crying. He's like, I don't want to. But, and we understood. It's like,
I wasn't going to make him go in. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing is,
I think I gave him my phone.
Oh, to sit out. Yeah.
So he
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seriously. I think because I mean, he has a phone now.
Right. It's just right outside. It's very suburban. And there's kids that live next door. So there was a kid riding like a trike and who's, about his age or maybe even a little younger and like an older brother. And of course they know people show up there. They live right next door. And they're like, I can't remember. They said, it's like, are you going to go in there? And they're like, yeah, we're going to do a tour. And I think one of the kids said like, yeah, I wouldn't.
It was like that.
Oh, I don't know if I would go in there. Like, okay.
You know, but on top of that, he's riding like a big wheel, like the kid from The Shining.
Oh, man. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Real slow on the sidewalk.
Yeah, these are normal kids. He's not. Yeah, there's no Danny. No Danny Torrance activity going on. But here's my point, though, with Scott's son is that, yeah, your typical, game whiz 14-year-old, and he's seen it all. And this is what's funny. He's like Scott. I think he was even last year. Showed him The Exorcist, and it's like, okay, what do you think? He's like, ugh, terrible effects. This is silly. And it's like, that's interesting to me. That is fascinating because again. When I was a kid, and in fact, I just saw a friend of mine, I can't remember where I saw this, but It was a reel of people reacting in the theater at the time to The Exorcist, and people were shaken. They were fainting. They were
throwing up.
Freaked out. They had to leave the theater. It's like, when's the last time that happened? Well, as a society, we're all used to just special effects and CGI and the most crazy things vomiting all over us in the theater or now at home, which also takes you out of that effect because it's in your home. You're not in a theater isolated. You're eating a snack, you're making popcorn, you're doing this and that. You're distracted. You're on your phone and you're watching Exorcist on the TV. And to him, it's like he's seen so much mind-blowing filmic stuff now that if 18 cars aren't flipping, on a damn bridge, it's like
the Michael Bay problem.
Yeah. Right. And so what I was wondering is like, okay, then really what was frightening to me as a kid is like, it's not the special effects or the pea soup. And that certainly she looked horrific and scary. And that image was frightening, but it was the concepts that were frightening to me. And mostly is that you didn't have to go to Regan's house to get scared. Like you don't have to, like you have to go to the Sally house to experience that. It comes to you. And as I'm like, it could happen here in my head, like that I could bring that home, or I start playing again, you know, the Ouija board and Captain Howdy comes out of it. Like, I don't, that's scary. I don't want that coming, you know, and my parents can't do anything about it. Like that is frightening. And so I'd be curious to see Rhode, like the weazened modern tween, almost teenager or teenager coming in, and if his attitude would change, or if he's like, yeah, this is still a bunch of nothing. Like just, that was silly to be like being scared. It's like, I'll stay a week here.
Yeah. He's going to have that false bravado of youth.
Yeah.
Well, and here's the thing, nothing may happen. And he may be like, this place stinks. And let's go get some Mexican food. Look at that.
No, he knows enough about my show, or our show, I should say. He doesn't trifle with stuff.
How do you think he would react now, knowing again?
Because I think he's still he's a lot more
mature.
There.
He's a lot more mature.
Yeah.
He wouldn't go?
I don't think so.
Oh, interesting.
He's not. It's kind of like I have my wife's sister and husband are both ordained Methodist ministers.
Okay.
And when I got and she her my wife's sister currently has a church in outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, and he works on the academic side of things on behalf of the Methodist Church with universities.
Oh, okay.
But when we came back with that recording, I said, I was telling him about the experience in Kansas. I was like, "Do you want to hear this?" And he goes, "Nope." And I said, "Why not? I don't need to hear it. I know evil exists." That's what he said.
Wait, that was Dr. Tim.
Dr. Tim. Yeah. Wow. And Roe is, I think, my son, I think has a similar disposition. He's like, I don't not believe in this. I don't need to prove it. I don't need to experience it. I believe what happened to you, Dad. So I'm good. This thing's checked off. I'm going to go over here. That's like, I think that's where he would be at now. Yeah.
No, it's interesting just because, I mean, he's, thoroughly modern, sophisticated, kid, smart as a whip. And he's, I think he's got a, like, probably like his dad, he's got a good analytical mind to him. And that, like, I know how this works now. And as he's getting more knowledgeable, certainly very knowledgeable about aircraft and different technical things, that if he would go in there, it's like, okay, I don't, this is unusual, but I think there's an explanation for this. Therefore, it doesn't really scare me. It's creepy because there's a difference. Things can be creepy, but it's not like, like I said, walking down a deserted road at night. With the moonlight coming through the trees, like that could be creepy, but there's nothing there, right?
Yeah.
Blair Witch freaked him out. That scared him pretty good.
And then,
I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah, he was real scared, and then but it got ruined by. Do you know what Vudu is? A streaming platform.
Mm-hmm. It's Vudu.
Walmart owns it now, but so we have movies in the cloud up there, and I had rented Blair Witch, or my wife and I had, to show him, and he was super scared, and then. He had to go to the bathroom or something, and I paused it, and all the freaking actors' headshots came up.
Oh no!
I was livid. It immediately took him out of it. Immediately.
Yeah.
And he was like, "Oh my god, they're actors!" And I was just like, I think I actually sent an email to Vudu. Like, what is the matter with you?
Right.
Yeah. I think that was
the whole movie.
Yeah. That was the first viral marketing campaign that I
remember. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because I was, they came in what, 98, 99?
Something like that. Yeah.
So I was 15 or 16, very gullible at that point. And I remember buying in completely.
Yeah.
Until I saw the film and then I realized. But
right.
You know, you think up to this point, this has got to be real and, you know, what, get sucked in.
On the other hand, though, it's a terrific life lesson for Ro. Is that it's like, it's Scooby Doo. You pull the mask off. there's just a dopey person behind it. But, you know, in knowing the difference, like I said, I've always felt, you know, people ask me, it's like, look, are you afraid of anything? It's like, well, I mean, I'm not afraid of the concepts. Because I think that's part of our natural world, as unnatural as it appears to be and seems, and how rare it is. That's also part of the mystique and part of the scariness of it. But I don't think it's necessarily anything to be afraid of, in the same way that I'm not afraid to use power tools or afraid of bears when I go camping. Mm-hmm. I've certainly been camping in Glacier quite a bit, and there's tons of grizz there. And you learned, yeah, that's always a danger. You could get surprised. You might have to try and run up a tree to save your life. Mm-hmm. Or as the joke goes there, outrun your friend. You know, right.
Well, there's a difference between fear and caution.
Right.
And, you know, you can have caution.
I would say respect. And part that's of that it. Is respecting whatever it is that could harm you. It's respecting, you know, when I work on the engine of a car, I respect that there's parts here that could... snip off a finger. There's the same thing with a power tool, or when you go swimming in the ocean, it's like, yeah, there's sharks here. When you just walking along the shoreline, we were taught here in Southern California to shuffle your feet because there's stingray there. Not gonna kill you, but it's gonna ruin your day. And the same thing with bears is that you don't have to be afraid, but you do need to respect their power and the ability to cause harm or ruin your day. So like I said, I think that's all part of the natural world as well. This is something that, and here's the thing, you know, most people who go in there disrespecting someplace, it's like probably nothing's going to happen. You know, tons of kids who've stolen headstones. And then occasionally you get a story like the one at Parashaney that we covered, where they tried to steal the witch's headstone, take it home and get in a car accident. If that story is true.
Yeah.
And, right. You know, or you're the Brady Bunch and you take home the piece of lava, whatever it is. what we do know is that, again, it's heuristic thinking, where one incident after another connects that as being true. But we have talked to a park ranger who worked at the Kate Batts, which
Conjuring.
The Adam House, where it's a state park, and he says, people return pebbles all the time that they took.
Yeah,
took it home, and then this crap happened, and it's like, I don't know what the connection is, but it was like Rick saying, I don't want to mess with it.
Right. I was actually there, and I didn't do anything either. So,
Like I said, you're taking.
I had a piece of the Silver Bridge for a minute, but I left that behind too.
It's good move.
It's just part of it. You don't scratch your name into the Colosseum in Rome.
No.
Right.
You don't do. And I think with what's funny is it's also a different perspective, and it turns out to be personal, in that we talk with really great guy. I'm blanking on his name, but it was for our Ouija episodes, and he is a collector, probably one of the biggest collectors in the country, if not the world, of spirit communication devices, especially vintage ones. And he lives in Austin, and he's got a nice modest size house, but, like, you know, as he says, I'm a maximalist. I like all the walls filled with all these antique kind of things, and they're all Ouija boards and talking boards and spirit dials and all kinds of stuff. And of course, the natural question is like, have you heard anything weird happen? He's like, no, I don't use these things. They're just hanging up. I don't sit there and try to communicate with every one of them. Right. So he says, I've never had a problem. But that, again, doesn't matter. Maybe something is there that wants to reach out to you and, you know, kind of slap you upside the head.
Right.
To freak you out. Because, again, there's pranksters in life. There are pranksters in the afterlife, I've got to believe.
Well, Rick's like Scott said. Yeah, I am going to be a prankster in the afterlife, absolutely. but no, like Scott said, with his experience at the Sally House, he didn't want it to happen after it had already happened. And I hear that from experiencers, you know, across UFOs, ghosts, Bigfoot, that once they've encountered it, they wish they hadn't.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing. Like, that's the flip side of the coin. I've never experienced anything. Would I like to? Yeah, I'm open to it, but I'd be afraid of what would happen afterwards.
You know, well, it's interesting that, like, you know, I don't think it will happen tomorrow, but we could all find out tomorrow that aliens are real.
And I'm
like, that could happen tomorrow.
Right. Yeah.
And then we'll all be the before and after versions you know, because then a lot of people who, you know, there's all these theories about how people would react to that psychologically and, you know, the collapse of religion and philosophy and spiritualism. Mm-hmm. And I don't
think all that would happen. I mean,
I don't either. I think some people will, you know, some people might, but like not everybody.
No, it's that middle ground. Maybe some voters flip. It's like an election, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's like, oh, that's going to turn the election. It's like, people pretty much knew how they were going to vote before
it
happened. Yeah. And so, to Scott's point, it's like you have people who already believe, who said, like, I told you so. And then you're going to have the people who said, like, it's another round of subterfuge. They're trying to get us to look away from what's
going on.
I think someone, all this stuff. I would apologize, but I'm down at the beach.
Yeah.
And there's definitely fireworks or something going on, so I apologize for that.
Okay.
Oh, we can't hear it. It's fine.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. We're not. Yeah. But oh God, what was I going to say? Oh Lord, I lost it. Thinking about fireworks now.
Oh yeah, no, sorry. Yeah.
It's okay.
Wait, we're talking about what was he? Well, hold on. Before his fireworks,
the aliens.
So one thing that I think of when talking about disclosure or anything like that, I think there's going to be that reaction from people. And I think of the movie Contact, Jake Busey's character.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I almost said Gary Busey. That would have been awesome. But Jake Busey, you know, he blows up the launch site.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to have those kinds of reactions from both sides of the spectrum, regardless of what, you know, if aliens are real, you're going to have crazies on each end. It's the fringe you've got to worry about.
Yeah.
And that's, I kind of expect that reaction, but
I don't know if you've read Skinwalkers at the Pentagon, but one of the, you know, one of the tenets of that is that there's people at the Pentagon and inside the government who think that UFOs and all of that, all of it, there you go, is demonic. And they're blocking any kind of, trying to block investigations because they think it's demonic or somehow related to things that shouldn't even be talked about. And then these are high ranking military officials.
Right. But to that point, Scott, though, it's like the that one post that I was I don't think he's Scott's read it yet. And it's very long, but it is on Reddit.
Oh, no, I just pulled it up right before the, I'm planning to look at it. I remembered that I hadn't read it and I'm planning to look at it after we finish this interview.
I mean, we could do a whole episode on that because at the end of it, I mean, it's very technical. It talks about DNA and experimentation and morphology and all these scientific principles. And what I've gathered and from what we've talked about with people who have backgrounds in biology is that the guy talks the talk. Now, whether this is true remains to be seen because, of course, this person has to remain anonymous, but they claim to have worked and studied exobiology and the extraterrestrials. And at the end of that, though, of course, they're asked, like, well, what do we know about their society and religion? And not to give anything away, but those are very, even more so, groundbreaking, earth-shattering, mind-bending, conscious-destroying principles, in that it brings into question then our religion and our societal makeup and how people would react. And it has a lot to do with philosophy. And, you know, yes, people have felt the same way about remote viewing, and that's government and military involvement, in that there are some people who are politicians more so who don't believe it should be tinkered with, because then you're you know, delving into the occult and fortune telling.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, all right, I can see that point. But I think with UFOs, like I said, that may seem silly to some, is that, oh, well, whatever it is, it's not demonic. This isn't the devil flying around spaceships. But when you read the scientific viewpoint on this, I don't see that as being disconnected from this, because then you are at some point talking about religion and who made us and what are their intentions? Mm-hmm. Because you can say, like, okay, well, Here's another I'm sure that I wanted to a good friend Letters, another paranormal podcaster out of the UK, turned us on to, and it is it was originally the book and got turned into a series that is now, I think, came out in 2017, also 2018, Childhood's End.
Yeah.
And it's a fascinating that was also Arthur C. Clarke, I believe, who wrote the book and then got turned into a series. But it's very visual in that, what if the aliens came and they looked like, I won't spoil it, but something that is very mythological that we would not expect them to look like. And then you see them, it's like, wait, what? That's what you look like? That is okay.
Yeah.
That is not what we're expecting, but also something we are very familiar with.
Oh, that's like, that's also the old Star Trek, where it was like, they were dressed like Romans. Remember that one?
There's different ways to look about it. And then how would we react if that were the case? And then you do questions like, okay, this is so obvious and so like your fairy tale from childhood, fable. It's like, how are we supposed to react to this? Because there's the obvious way, which would say, this is staring you in the face. This is so obvious that there's only one way to react to this, which is that's how we were raised. That's how our logic works. Or do you bypass this? Like, okay, we're going to forget that part of it and just see what they got to say and what they're going to do. And then you have to make a judgment. It's like, well, you can have all these great things, but you're going to have to give up some of your humanity and some of the things you love to achieve all this. And that's kind of the big question behind that. But getting back to this scientist's statement, is that it may seem silly that this is has anything to do with demons or religion or this and that, but it really does. Because now it's like your religion, what your beliefs are, or even if you're atheist, may not be, well, according to this, is not what you think it is.
Right.
And you are going to have the biggest shock of your life, and you're going to have to deal with it, because it deals with everybody on this planet and where we're headed and who may be controlling it. And so at that point, though, you do wonder, like, is this in a way demonic or angelic or neutral, or are we in trouble?
Right.
And do we have any control over ourselves, or does it, really matter in some way? Is that, this just happened. We got alien overlords, but you know what? I still got to go to work. I got
yeah.
Kids are hungry. They got soccer. I got to pay for stuff. And so while this machine's going, until we're in this utopia where everything's free and you can all eat as much ice cream as you want, never get fat, we still have to carry on with our law, you know, with our lives. And that is,
we won't get old and we won't ever die.
And here's the other thing, though, that comes into question with an alien intelligence is that okay, so if we are, let's just say, manipulated into what we are now, and they don't seem to share these silly emotions that we have. I still believe in certain things, and that the greatest of them is love. And if they don't feel that, then too bad for them. I don't care about them.
Right.
Also, they've lied to us. So am I going to trust anything that they've said previous to that or now?
Right.
If they're real. So again, I thought about it for quite a long time, because it's a lot about philosophy.
Yeah.
And that's what we say about our podcast. Like, everything boils down to philosophy, a belief of your origin, where we came from, what's real, what's part of our world. How do you think about it? Because again, it doesn't matter if you believe in cryptids or not. When you see one, you're going to have to question that.
Right. Right.
Well, I think I'm coming at this from I came into this as a flesh and blood person. Let's find out what everything is. Is it real? Is it fake? And I've, over the years, I've transitioned to, it's more about, like you're saying, the philosophy of it and the reflection of humanity in that, and people's experiences with all of these stories and lore and myth and legend and all of that. And it's changed my mindset, and it's very new for me. It's very different for me. And I'm finding it to be a very positive experience too. Mm-hmm. And I hope everybody else can have that same positive experience when they're opening themselves up to it.
I think that's well put.
Yeah.
Oh, but absolutely. I have an update on something.
Yeah.
Okay.
My son just came in here to tell me that cookies were in the oven.
That's boy.
Oh, yay.
I asked him, I said, would you go? I was wrong. I said, would you go in the Sally house? And he said, I would. I was going to put him on, but I'm using headphones and I didn't want to try to set up speakers and stuff. But
get him back in here and high five him.
Yeah. So he said, I would. And then he added the caveat was if you went with me. And then he said, and then he said, because I trust you.
he knows
and I know you do the right thing.
Dad's gonna walk right out of the place.
I wouldn't take him in there. I wouldn't take him in there.
No,
I wouldn't do that. I'm not going back. I don't even like flying over it when I'm going from California to the East Coast. So I wouldn't take him in there.
Dad's gonna walk straight out and leave you still in there.
Oh God, no way.
What he needs to do is get one of those backpacks for kids, except put it on you and tether you to. You can't run off.
As he pulls the doors off the hinges. But that's the thing is that you may go back up there. I went right back in with the recorder and tried to do the same thing just so we could repeat the results. Or if the recorder is malfunctioning, we want to get that too. And I didn't get really anything. There was a couple of very minor blips of sound, but nothing, nothing that sounded like words. And I was feeling very defiant. It's just like, oh, yeah, you got something to say? Well, say it again. Let's say you do the trick again. And either that's like, yeah, we don't want to talk to you. So just go on your way. Or
we wanted the other guy.
Watch this. We're not going to do anything. And then it's just like, you get nothing. You drank they stole the fizzy lifting drinks. You ruined your experience. Get out.
Nothing.
Good day, sir. Good day, sir. Yeah.
I said good day. So that was my thing. Is like, you don't scare my friends. How dare you? Whatever you are. So you got something to say? Say it to me. And it was no. The answer was no. And it would have been hilarious if it's like, do you have anything to say now? And we got back no. But but here's the thing. I've used that recorder a lot since then. As I said various Midwest ghost hunting trips and at my home and going up to visit my folks. And it keeps getting stuff. And there are
all different classes. Reasons. Yeah. All different classes of EVPs. Ooh. It's not just the screaming man. It gets clear verbal, clear language as well.
So you think that was a guy? Did you get, I thought that was a girl. I kind of got
in the Sally house.
I kind of thought it sounded like a girl to me.
It's interesting. I don't think it was. Yeah.
I don't think it was ever human.
Well, there's all manner of thought about that, but it's interesting, that you say that, Tanya, because some medium friends of ours, as well as other investigators, have claimed that there is a protective female spirit there that is watching over the house, and it's either trying to repel things from coming in. Because that whole place is a Grand Central Station for spirit, or it's trying to keep something contained in the house.
Yeah.
And also, our good friend John Killian was there with Jill and Megan again, and they got a very clear EVP that sounded like a female voice, right, Scott? Remember that was?
Yeah.
I forgot. Could it sound like a young child that was playing? And of course, that's why you do a lockdown, because you know that no one else is in there.
Right.
No, it's interesting that people have sensed that. Also, people have said that was what they believe was attacking Tony. Not so much MC Finney, one of the founders of the house, but he's because people thought that's what the initials
can't were. Scratch this.
And there you go. And so again, that's heuristic thinking that it's the initials MC that were scratched into Tony's back. It's got to be MC. But maybe not. Like I said, I could have, if I was a spirit, I could have done that. And they think
there's a lot of lying that goes on. There's a lot of lying and subterfuge.
Right.
But
a lot of people believe that, again, the mediums believe that to some, that it was a female spirit that was attacking and attracted to Tony and did not like Deborah, his wife.
His wife, yeah.
There was something there, and that maybe she, again, that's the bad feelings, that maybe she was kind of spurring that, and who knows? Again, it's a paranormal soap opera. All manner of things with their own intentions and, motivations.
So, Scott, have you had an experience since then?
No, nothing like that. But after I left there, I had ongoing problems for over 6 months that seemed real strange. Lots of strange stuff. I think I told it on the show at some point, or I can't remember if it was part of the original series, but there was a point at which, no, there's no way, because it was later. There was a point at which I had like sat at an intersection with mm-hmm. this thought in my head that I was going to get T-boned, and then the light turned. I actually even put the emergency brake on in my car, which has one of those electronic ones, which I never do at a light. I put the brake on, and then I kind of zoned out thinking I'm going to get hit. And then I realized that the light had changed, and I put the brake down. And at that moment, a car flew through the intersection going mm-hmm. like 40 miles an hour.
Oh, well.
Had I gone when the light changed, it would have T-boned me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a lot of weird stuff that seemed like it was connected. And then, this is a little bit of a stranger thing to talk. And I think I've said this somewhere before, but I can't remember. A month or two later, I went to a resort with my wife for a nice vacation. I was getting in Hawaii and, signed up for a, like super high end massage. Yeah, it was a thought. And then God, was it that and acupuncture? It was five elements acupuncture, maybe.
Well, it was a,
it's hard to find people that are certified in this. Yeah. It's
no, like, okay.
A Reiki suit.
Oh,
laying on hands.
Yeah. There, but I mean, it was the resort offered it, you know, the person came to the resort and
yeah.
I didn't tell her anything about Sally, but I was still feeling kind of like connected to something there. And after the session, which went a little longer, she asked me if something strange had happened to me.
Oh, wow.
Then when I told her, she said, I sensed a malevolent, dark force that was connected to you that I removed from you. And she said, and for a minute, it was up in the top of this hut floating and it finally dissipated.
Oh, wow.
And that's when I told her about the thing. And after that, by the way, all this strange stuff stopped happening.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah. So that was crazy. That was crazy. It was also expensive.
Yeah. But, it was worthwhile.
It was worth it. Yeah.
Yeah.
The money that turned into a black mist and floated up.
Yeah. Yeah. My money. Yeah. It was my wallet passing through the ceiling.
See, I was going to say that was an investment in your future.
Yeah. Hey, it was. And I tried to get five elements again. There was one person that practiced it in Greensboro where I live now.
Oh, and, Scott, that is the type of practice or discipline.
Yeah, it's called five elements. For some reason, my internet is not working right now. Our Zoom is working, but
yeah.
I was trying to, my browsers won't work right now. So I'm having like VPN problems or something, but like.
Or maybe it's
all right.
Oh,
there we go.
Yeah. Now, I was going to pull up, I was going to try to find that guy's name, the Ouija collector, and I couldn't even get our website to open. So. But anyway,
while you're waiting for that, tell them about.
Yeah. I'm not waiting anymore. I had to give up.
Oh, it was another odd thing that happened. I'll set this up. I'll just tell it. It's you do wonder about, because again, all this is coincidence, or can be a lot of mm-hmm. written off as coincidence. And then, as we say, it's like yes, they happen, but they must not happen too often. Because then you like how many coincidences are too much. So we were talking to Debbie Chestnut, the author who writes, she's a bit of a paranormal investigator and author and writes about these subjects and has a lot of experience with it. And we were talking, I think we were on a Zoom call with Scott, myself, Scott and I were in the same, where we used to record in his guest house. And then Debbie was on Zoom out of Michigan. And then we also had, I'm not going to give the person's name, but we were discussing their case, and I mm-hmm. believe even Tess may have been on as well. And so and I can't remember if we were talking about the Sally house, because she was familiar with it, Debbie, and we were discussing something that's like, oh well, there was an entity there that Scott may know more about it, that the that we feel has either still checked in on Scott or is still kind of lingering. And at that moment, this photo pops up out of nowhere on all of our Zoom feeds, as you know, as we were screen sharing, I think, right?
Yeah.
Scott was already screen sharing and wasn't intending to put up this photo, but it popped up. And it was, as you may or may not know, so Tony Pickman, also locally does a lot of he likes to make special effects models and horror movie models.
Hmm.
And he created this really horrific humanoid looking thing that is bending down, that looks basically like it's been through a very bad fire.
Oh gosh.
And it has this long tongue that basically looks like a big piece of bacon. So everybody refers to it as the bacon monster. And that is the image that popped up on our Zoom when right on cue. So it's just like,
yeah, he also thing? Said that thing is based on something he saw in his bedroom at the Sally house.
Oh wow.
And so we were talking Debbie, to her,
and it deployed itself from my hard drive into the Skype call.
Zoom. Wow.
It was a Skype call, actually. That's Skype. Right. Yeah, no, because I'm remembering that now. Because I contacted Skype, and I said, how could this happen?
Right.
That an image. I didn't say what it was. They said that there's no reason that should have happened. Hmm. I was like, why is this image getting shared between all the people on the...
Right.
And they said it shouldn't have happened.
And here's my thing about all that stuff. If, like... it's like, well, there was one entity or demon that we're talking about, the Sally house, that kind of scared us. And Debbie's like, oh, what was that? And a picture of a kitty riding a Roomba shows up, like, well, okay, well, that's not that scary or in context.
Right.
But it's funny. I mean, that would be like, well, that's a funny, weird glitch. But the fact that in context of that thing, that is the scariest thing we've seen at this alley house, pops up. It's like, here's your answer. And
yeah, because that's what we were talking about in that moment.
Yeah.
And it was, that's what I'm saying. It's
weird.
It's an answer in context to a question you posed. And that's what I say about EVPs is that, you know, people say like, well, that's just a bunch of noise, or you were running the SB7, the broken radio, the noisy radio. And look, that just gets crap off the air. It's not necessarily an answer or anything spooky or paranormal. And I say, well, yeah, I would tend to believe it, though, when you ask a specific question and you get a very specific answer.
Right.
So that's what I always say. It's just like, can you tell us the name of this spirit here? And it comes, you know, you get the ovulus and it comes back, birthday cake. It's like, well, that's not your name, but you get it. You back. It's like, you knew somebody there historically, the older relative who died in the house, whose name was Larry. And you get back, is everyone here wants to talk to us? And it comes back Larry, like, okay, that's quite a coincidence that the specific answer you were looking for, wondering if it was there, comes back. And that's the answer. Rather than mayonnaise or some other word. It's like, well, that doesn't make any sense. You got an answer to your question. Sure, it can be a coincidence, obviously, but
yeah,
it has more meaning to me if you asked a question and you got a specific answer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what it's about. It's about your personal experience. And that's kind of what I'm having to realize. It's as if it's like tarot. You know, you're flipping through the deck, you're pulling a card based on your intent and what's going on in your life, and then that applies to the situation. So it's all about the context. So I totally
like how you keep having examples next to
you. I like set it all up beforehand.
No, this is just my office.
I know your room
stuff
is like, yeah.
Do you want to talk about Star Wars Legos? Because we can talk about Star Wars Legos.
Well, you're right. I think it is the context, and you impart part of it too. Is you impart the meaning that you want or think is appropriate, or no meaning at all. That's the other part that we were talking about earlier with people's experiences that they've emailed us about. And it's just like, well, this really weird thing happened. I asked for some proof. And then like a family photo album shows up in the middle of the floor of a locked room.
Right.
But I don't think there's anything to that. It's like, okay. Then there isn't. If you don't think that that's a sign, then whatever that message was, it fell on deaf ears. And there is no message. I always ask people, and of course we've gotten a lot of flack for this. It's like people, I say, how do you feel? Like, what do you think that was? Did you get a sense of male, female, relative, friends, a stranger? How do you feel? And people will usually have some kind of feeling about it. It's like, well, I definitely felt like, I think it was my grandmother. It just felt very warm and loving. And I smelled her perfume. And it's like, no one else did, but you know, people will say, well, that's just your imagination. You missed your grandmother. You wanted to hear it. So your imagination created that. And maybe that is the case. But also, I say, why not have it be a heartwarming message from beyond, from your grandmother that you missed? that no one, you know, you don't have to follow anyone else's logic or sense of debunking skepticism.
Well, you're making it your own.
That dream you're having about your grandfather the past 20 years ago, like, it's not just it doesn't necessarily have to just be a dream.
It could be
that's just that slight change of mindset opens you up to so many other things now, and that's important to me, you know.
You create the importance, and it's like it doesn't have to be anything you don't want to be, and you don't have to make it or believe anybody else. And I think that's what you're talking about earlier about getting evidence, is that after a while it's just like, this is really unprovable. You do get some amazing evidence, and I think people who say, like, well, we've never, you know, all these years we've never gotten a great ghost photo, like, no, we have.
Yeah, we have.
And if you're looking at it for, we've never gotten any great Bigfoot footage, like, no, we have. Yeah. That's the better. Yeah. We've never gotten any great, you know, official footage of UFOs, like, no, we have.
Well, if you're a skeptical debunker, you're going into all of these things looking for the reason it's fake. You're not analyzing. Well,
it's impossible. Here's the thing. It's like, there is no other answer. The answer is, what is the mundane explanation, because there can't be an impossible explanation or anything else. We know about this stuff, and it's like, okay, that's a, you know, I can't fault you for that, for starting there, and you're sticking to it, and you're agnostic about it. If you, until you see something else, that's what it, there has to be an everyday obvious answer. It's like, okay, well, find that out. It's just that sometimes I'm not impressed with the obvious answer, that it was flares or owls or
owls,
you know, down to cranes. It's like, okay, that's mundane from everyday objects, but that makes less sense to me.
Well, it sucks some of the joy out of things too, if you're just constantly looking for the no, it couldn't have been this, it has to be bleh. It's a sour approach to life, and you just can't do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, to get, but, you know, bringing it around again to when we were kids, and like, what made life exciting is the possibility of all these things. That's right. What interested me into this, in studying this, is that I didn't feel a need to swat all this down. I say, like, what else is there? What is
right?
Show me the other weird stuff. And that was all. That's what made life interesting. And I choose to live in a more mystical, mysterious world.
Here. Now look at us.
and now we've just a collection of kind nerds who love this stuff. And, it's fascinating, but I think we keep the conversation going. I think that's important. And again, what we found out tomorrow with the hearings is that we do have we do know more about this stuff than we've been saying, and we do have some evidence and recovered whatever technology, exotechnology there is. Mm-hmm. Again, people who don't believe this at all, it's not going to be enough. Right. And
it never will be.
It won't. Yeah, it won't be convinced. The Russian kinesiologists who were studying Bigfoot, and they certainly had a bit different attitude towards it. I can't remember one, but that was during the Patterson-Gimlin days. It was that, like, he was talking about basically other anthropologists saying, like, you will not be convinced until you have a stuffed one in your office.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's going to be what it is. You're going to need to put your hands on it and get shocked or. or like Joe Symington, you get served pancakes from aliens.
Salt-free pancakes.
So, right, just flavorless, and like, that's the best you can come up with. Yeah. Well, I don't need to go on board to see that. You're going to, like I said, I think whatever happens tomorrow, it's going to be reinforcing probably what you already believe. But there will be a good and hopeful segment of the population that scratches their chins. It's like, maybe there is something to this. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should start paying attention. And you don't have to switch everything up. Certainly continue what you're doing. Certainly continue to love your family and your friends and treat everybody as you would want to be treated. But also consider this possibility that this may be part of our reality. And
I hope so.
It could be just as, like I said, if it's horrible, I think it would have been horrible a long time ago.
Right.
If you have alien overlords and they've constructed everything that is your reality, it's just like, I'd see no point for them. Like, yeah, you caught us. Okay. Going back. We're going to pull the Matrix plug down.
Yeah.
is what it's really like, I think they'll be just like, if this is an experiment, as Charles Fort said, we were all part of someone else's experiment. Why end it now? It's just like, right. Well, continue on doing what you're right. doing. We'll just be watching.
Right.
And, maybe that's it, but it's like that's the part to me that it's where it doesn't really matter. It's like, mm-hmm. well, that was fascinating. I want to know more about this, but I'm just going to still have my values and my beliefs.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Me too.
I like that approach.
Yeah.
All right. You guys ready for some rapid fire questions?
Yeah.
Sure. Close it out. Yeah, there are wrong answers, by the way.
Okay. Oh,
well, okay. Rick thinks there is, but I.
All right.
There's wrong
All
answers.
Right, Scott, what world record do you think you have a shot at beating?
World record that I think I have a shot at beating. Oh my God. Wow. That's a hard question.
Yeah, put you on the spot.
Yeah. Probably the most number of cars owned by someone who's not really a car collector.
That, yeah. Interest has to be gauged. Yeah, the difference.
I don't know. Yeah, I've had. Yeah, yeah, what? I'm not gonna say how old I am, but I've had I think 36 cars.
Good. Oh wow!
That have come through. That have passed through your possession. At some
yes.
Point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
That's Horace, what about you?
I know I have are not able to beat this world record because I'm sure there is a world record of this, although I have not checked it, but it would be hours continually spent blathering on.
Oh,
as
yeah.
As I've just proved I can do at least an hour, 2 hours of this. But yeah, at some point, no, we're just going to record
it. He's going to try it right now.
No. I would not. That's the thing that nobody wants to, you don't do that to people you care. It's the golden rule. That's what I've just been talking about. You just treat people. I wouldn't want that happening. But the idea of, I think personally, what's been broken, I don't think Scott and I ever dream this would happen, but the collected hours of us blathering on in mm-hmm. 9 years of podcasting blows my mind. It's just,
yeah, that would be a lot.
It's not as people, there's people who do daily podcasts. Like, oh, we're up to episode 485 mm-hmm. or
that's insane.
Or even like Joe Rogan or some of these other folks, Jim Harold, been doing it since 2005 and is coming up on his 18th anniversary show. Just
wow.
That just dropped today, actually.
Yeah. Did it? Okay.
Yeah.
We're gonna Tuesday. Be. He said right. He told us he was gonna be talking about us in part two, or clips of us in part two.
Part two. But, yeah. And but I think just looking at us, it's like that's something we never thought would be recorded and out there for the world. And again, our apologies for that. But
until the next solar flare.
Yeah, to the star right. and the soul of humanity. But it's just the sheer number of hours that we have made notes and pontificated and talked about things we researched and just had conclusions and ideas. That's pretty amazing, and also amazing about the number of people that we've become friends with and met mm-hmm. through this. But yeah, so it's again no world record, but I never thought I'd be I guess on the web for this amount of time.
Yeah, you're very verbose, I think, is
yes. Yeah. And that's just the part of that's the nature of us and our show and what we like to talk about and how
right.
To what depth, yeah. You know.
Mm-hmm.
What is your favorite breakfast food?
I honest to God, I really just like a couple of eggs over medium well with a couple slices of tomato and
yum.
You know, maybe a couple pieces of bacon or hash browns or some other little thing. But I love eggs, honestly. I love some good eggs in the morning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well cooked, like by a person that can actually make them medium well, which a lot of times people can't do that. So
no, they can't. It's very difficult.
Yeah. How about you, Forrest?
I would say, especially if it depends again on context. If I'm out on a road trip, there are certain foods I will try to order if I see it offered, just to gauge the quality throughout the nation. I would say a chicken fried steak.
Okay.
It depends. Nice. Yeah. Like I said, that could also be a good dinner, but like, yeah, chicken fried steak and eggs, something like that. And I've had some really good ones, just on road trips and different travel in those little tiny diners that you get just rolling nice. Through town, and you know it's going to be, because that one, like I said, it doesn't have to be exotic. You don't need saffron from the Middle East. you just need a good basic recipe. And if it's a sandwich, I would say I see it offered, I will try a Reuben.
That's my gold standard for a restaurant. If they have a good Reuben, then I know the rest of it's good.
Mine's biscuits and gravy. What I usually pick.
Biscuit. Yeah, you know what? Biscuits and if it's a southern location, white sausage gravy, biscuits, because those are two things you can judge on. Is it peppery enough? Does it have like a little bit of fat, that tang there, and are the biscuits good? And if you can do good biscuits, the rest of it should be okay.
Yeah. All right. So this might date you guys, but what was your first? Who was your first celebrity crush?
This is interesting.
Go ahead.
It probably was because I had a poster of Heather Thomas, not Locklear, Thomas.
Oh, okay.
Who I think was. She was an actor, or is an actor. Well, I haven't seen her in forever, but that would be not quite a celebrity. She was sort of a pinup, because I don't think I get her and Heather Locklear. I get them mixed up, because which one was on the Fall Guy?
That's
Heather Thomas on the Fall Guy.
That's Heather Thomas. Okay, that's her. Yeah. Okay. That's on the
Fall Guy. I watched the Fall Guy growing up. I like that show.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Forrest.
Well, are you talking of a romantic nature? Is that what you're? That was one of the
and posters. Susanna Hoffs. Oh yeah.
For oh okay.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Good choice. Yeah. Different eras. I'm 4 years older than Scott, and those are very formative years. I think every young guy, most of them had that famous Farrah Fawcett poster.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And you could get it. What was it? There was a young teens magazine. That was mostly educational. For some reason, they had a fold-out poster of Farrah, and it's the one. There's a Native American blanket. I think she's is the background, and she's just sitting on the side, giving a lovely cheeky wink. And everybody. That was a very popular one, and I think because growing up with Charlie's Angels, and you can see that was the good thing is that they weren't. They also had TV shows, right? So everybody had. Different connecting things. Scott and I just saw a clip of her in we were talking about it last night in Cannonball Run. There's not as much crossover nowadays because TV actors usually stuck to TV for the most part,
right?
And film actors stuck to their realm. And then occasionally you'd have people that were not like it is today. I guess that's the point I'm trying to make, is that who were just models or pinups, but there's certainly. And then as I got older, the poster that everybody had, certainly I had, was Cheryl Teagues, I think. And that, and that was where there was a shift in that kind of medium, because now there was the idea of the supermodel.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, well, they don't do anything else. Not like they tap dance, or act in movies. Like, because back in the 40s, when I was a kid, it's like that you would get people who could sing, dance, act in movies, play congas, something tremendous, and they were all around performers, and that was kind of expected, but we expected a lot more from them.
Right.
Rosemary Clooney, my grandfather drove her around for a little bit when she was with the USO, and sing, dance, tell jokes, could play a musical instrument. Like, it was not that people aren't talented nowadays, but it's just the idea of show business and talent was different. You look at Sammy Davis,
right.
The guy could dance. Right. He was a monster jazz drummer, singer, actor, great actor.
Right.
It's just like, the
answer is Sammy Davis Jr.
That's awesome.
I thought here's the thing is that
the glass eye.
The idea though is that growing up is that you saw just these massively talented people, but they occupied a different realm. And so, so I'd say like Farrah, it's like, I don't know if she's she's certainly a good actress. Like if you saw later in was it The Burning Bed?
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, you saw her differently. This is a
first
lot better.
Lifetime movie.
Charlie's Angels, it was TV was silly. That it's silly now, but it was silly back then and just good fun. And so you enjoyed it for that, but it's like, kind of attractive. Yeah. It's like, so you had that poster, and then Cheryl Teagues is like, she's just a model, but like, that's a pretty good poster. So so you had that up, and now it's, I guess, I don't know. Do people, I guess they still have posters, right? I don't.
Yeah, like, I assume so.
Yeah.
Are they just digital screens that are your, that compose right. your walls and you just, I mean, you just program
it's your background.
The only posters I have are of cryptids and stuff right. like that. But
yeah.
That's what I hope to be.
Yeah. I've got like a little known Belgian magician back here.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what that was.
That's what I was trying to figure out too.
That's cool.
Like, who's this Houdini ripoff?
He was the head of the magic whatever their Congress type thing is. He was the head in Belgium. And that's just his name backwards. His name was Rasquin.
Oh, cool.
Just as mysterious. Hard to pronounce.
Cool. But the poster's famous in the magic world for, because there's a whole, I have a whole book of magic posters and that one was in there, and I managed to find it. It's an original. I managed to find an original.
Nice. Like,
he's got the devils are whispering the secrets of the magic tricks into his ears. So
wicked.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Two more questions. Toilet paper, over or under?
This one has a wrong answer.
I agree. It does have a wrong answer. And I think Scott is of the wrong answer.
Oh, you're a psychopath?
Well, there's two things about this.
You have a cat. Right.
Firstly, it's definitely under or behind, because I am a large man. And invariably, when I am on the throne, that a lot of times... My arm, I can't get around. It's too close to me. I need it to be further away. So it's on the back. On the other hand, I actually will prefer, if it's easy to do, to take the roll off the thing.
And set it on the sink.
No, and just hold, like spin toilet paper off. So that Rick,
he's a psychopath.
There's a couple things. I don't want to communicate the sound to the other people in the house of it going like that.
How fast are you pulling it? The yard?
I'm picturing you the size of Andre the Giant trying to sit on a small toilet.
That's what I feel like when I'm 6'2". I'm 6'2", and like they put the thing over here, and I'm like in the, it's already like a, you know, it's like every bathroom feels like an airplane bathroom to me. So I want the part that I need to tear a little bit further away, so I'm not like putting my hand in my pocket to get to it.
I don't know why the 3 inches of the width of the toilet paper roll.
It makes a difference. For a lifetime of pooping, I'm just telling you.
I've sat at Scott's house quite a bit, at least when he was here in LA and Valley Village. And so I'd be there for a week or two at a time. And yes, that it upset me greatly. But what I would do is like I would flip it around. And then I don't know if I always wondered, I'd never heard any comment, but... this is my form of prank, is that you do good things for people and see if they notice. Yeah. But I would, before I left, I would take the toilet paper and fold it into a point like they do in the hotel.
Oh, yeah.
And just and go around and have it a point. So like, it's easy to pull. Just a tiny bit. And also flip it around. So just to annoy him. But I don't know if you ever noticed that. This is the first time I'm asking.
I might have noticed it. I don't know. I noticed the corn stalk you planted in my backyard.
Oh, there was several
shot. It was like 3 feet tall.
Here is the difference between what I was just talking about, and I'm trying to get better about bookending things, doing callbacks and buttons to stories. Is that while I was there, I thought, I also wanted to enjoy delicious sweet corn that I grew, and so I planted some corn. And one time there in his backyard, which was not, you know, it's just for shrubs. They had a patch, like they had a lawn, and then you have about 2.5-3 feet of soil, and then you have a fence right to the neighbor. So I planted some corn, and it started to come up, and there was enough shrubbery there that you didn't really notice at first. So I just watered it very well, and I think he was gone. I think they were gone for quite a long time, like maybe a month and a half that time.
Yeah.
It was quite a stretch.
Yeah.
And then here's the difference in opinion or viewpoint on the value of a magical world. And he came home and I waited and didn't really hear anything. It's like, oh, when's he going to notice the corn? And then finally, I just had to ask, like, okay, did you notice that there's corn growing? And he's like, oh, that was you? I just thought, Rowan just thought it was weird. And then I just thought some birds carried some seeds or something and dropped it. Like, really? That's the birds carrying, pooping out corn seeds
just as
that
likely.
Have to sprout?
Migratory coconuts.
Exactly.
And okay, then I found. Course, yeah. Oh, sorry. Just to finish that story on my end, it's like, so did you, they were ripe. It's a silver queen variety. It's supposed to be extra juicy and sweet. It's like, did you enjoy the corn? It's like, no, we chopped it down.
You were providing for his family, and he couldn't even thank you.
No, he just had the gardener just chop it down. Yeah.
Oh, good night.
That's the picture. Okay.
Yeah, I finally got it working on my phone there. My computer's still not working.
That's the bacon
monster.
That's unsettling.
Oh, yeah, that is unsettling.
That popped up mid-Skype.
Wow. Call. Yeah, that would be freaky.
Well, again, probably just a coincidence, right?
All right, Howard, have we destroyed your rapid fire plan yet? Or
no,
well, that was the other question.
One more.
Right. Okay. So, yes, my thing is toilet paper over.
But also, before we move on, I'm going to order a freestanding toilet paper holder for Scott so he can put it wherever he wants.
Thank you.
That is a great idea.
Over. That's what I like. It could go over the top in that case. Yeah.
Oh, the other thing I did not realize. Well, Tanya, were you saying like you don't, so cats don't pod it?
That's what Laura was saying. Yeah.
Interesting.
I had cats my whole life, but I don't now. So it's not a problem here.
Yeah.
Right, now I've got two dogs. Yeah.
That's all right. Last point. Question.
Okay.
Do you consider a hot dog a sandwich?
Do I consider a hot dog a sandwich? No.
Correct.
Why?
He's also wrong on that. However, I could see, again, it's a philosophical question, but that was, well, one, I hadn't thought about it until about a year or so ago with there was a TV campaign. Of course, Scott, being a former TV commercial editor, he and I pick up on commercials like that, and we will discuss them, and we have our favorites throughout our careers, but that was something I think advertising Siri or Alexa, and that was the question. And it was some guys in a car, and of course one guy's appears like, no, you're wrong, a hot dog is not a sandwich. And then they ask Alexa, it is a hot dog is considered a sandwich, so because you have the meat and you have the bread, it's just in a different shape, right?
Yeah.
So to me though, I could see it both ways. So it's, to me, it's like, yeah, it's not the how I typically, it's its own thing. A good 80 kind of a good hot dog could be it could be a good brat, any kind of sausage in there, sourdough or pretzel bun, whatever have you. It is its own thing, but I will concede to it being of thematically a sandwich.
Yes.
How's that? Just a different, just a different shape. So,
that's
yes.
fair. And the thing that I like that I've landed on that I've taken, I don't remember who said it. I've taken it for my own. You can take any object, and if you insert a hot dog at some point, that. Oh, you okay?
Clark? Sorry, that was Siri coming on to answer the question.
you take any object. It could be a burrito, and then once you've hit like 51% hot dog insertion, that becomes a hot dog. So you could, it's just the inclusion of the hot dog that makes it a hot dog. It's not a sandwich. It's not anything else. It just is a hot dog.
It's a hot dog. It's an overwhelming presence.
But that is a thought experiment that I learned in philosophy class. I think, and I can't remember if it's the two ships theory where. You have say two old wooden sailing ships and you start replacing planks, swapping planks from one to the other. At what point does one ship actually become the other? Should be considered. And so, wait, what was Scott's, what was your explanation for why it is not a sandwich?
Because it's a hot dog.
Well, yeah, see?
That, well, okay. But that, yes, but that is also.
Sandwich is two things that I'm a geometric thinker. It's two planes with a plane of a different design or makeup in between it.
Two unconnected pieces of bread or bread-like substance.
Right. Yeah.
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 But Scott, you're going to have to, we talk about this all the time. It's Dr. Flatland.
Right.
You're going to have to start thinking about things differently. And I think that is how we're going to have to start thinking about, maybe rounding it back here to, a fourth or fifth dimensional tesseract thinking, is that you now have objects in space that we're going to have to think about differently. And that it's like in Contact, we were talking about, it's the Venusians. It's that they don't think in just three dimensions, is that when you're on another level, you added another dimension to that. It's like a Spock playing a three dimensional chess.
Right.
Your very higher thinking is that you are in multiple levels at the same time, thinking concurrently or like quantumly, and that's another advancement. So then you have we're kind of this is what we talk about, we're kind of still thinking 2D, is that it's like, how do you know all these things? That's amazing, you must be psychic. It's like, we're not psychic, we're thinking in 3D.
Right.
It's and like, that's, man, I just whole... asked you about a hot dog.
Now we're just, talking quantum physics.
Yeah. If you just look at 2D, it's a round disc of meat and then a circle of bread. That's the hot dog. But really, it's cigar-shaped, and it's something else. But here's what freaks me out is that there's somebody or so, there's some intelligence out there, and we think in 3D. It's like, well, that's the end of it. We're the smartest. We've got it all figured out. We got these three dimensions. Yet they're in four or five or fifth dimensions.
Right.
Or
fifth dimensional hot dog.
Yeah. Or Michio Kaku, you've mastered all 11 dimensions. Good what kind of power does that give you?
Yeah.
So I'm expecting a five-part series from you guys on hot dogs.
Hey, we just made your show a five-part series. Yeah.
You
had us on.
You know, I'm glad I had my evening clear. So this has been fun.
Yeah.
We've ruined many a hard drive, and it's good. It wasn't the old days, Scott. Remember when you would, if you filled them up to the very brim, it locked them up, didn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah.
So yeah, people want to hear more of you guys talk. Where can people find you?
Well, I mean, if we don't sign off soon, it'll be here, I think. But like you can find Astonishing Legends at astonishinglegends.com. We're on every podcast platform there is. Your smart speaker will play us, all of that stuff. We have a Patreon too, where we have bonus stuff, and
you can go to astonishinglegends.com. That's our website where we have every episode will have its own webpage.
Every episode we've ever done is there and freely available. It's not behind a paywall or anything. So
cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. And Tanya, where can people find us?
On all the podcast players. we have a Patreon now. So, and we've got some people who've already signed up for it. So we're shocked about that.
Yeah,
we're shocked about that. And we have merchandise on Redbubble and Big Cartel. And
they're very cool stickers, so y'all should get some.
Thank you.
They're a lot of fun and good buttons and merch, and so check that out. It's it's memorable. It's iconic, and then that's what I loved about going to Monster Fest is like all of our favorites now. If you're in the know, you know, as the kids say.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, cool. Appreciate that.
We really appreciate you guys taking the time all night to do this. So
really. Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was great.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys. Take care.
All right.
Okay, see you later.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. You can find us on all the socials, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. Subscribe and review our pod wherever you listen. We have merch on Redbubble and Big Cartel. See you later, creeps.